to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang on Radio Sai's Thursday Live. Today, both Prem and me, we have gathered here in the divine studios of Bhagwan with a very wonderful, thrilling topic to discuss. Both of us are very eager to go ahead with that. This is about a historic visit. Now, I must state the disclaimer that when I say historic, it is actually a kind of a false thing, because everything that the avatar does is historic. In fact, Swami has defined history as his story. So anything connected to his story is going to be historic. But then this is definitely a special visit we are talking about, because this is the only visit that the avatar ever made outside the shores of the Indian subcontinent. This is the only overseas visit of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, if it can be said in that way. And therefore, it becomes historic. And this visit happened almost 5 decades before, half a century ago, in the June and July of 1968. And as everything connected with Swami, this visit has so many beautiful memories, so many beautiful insights, so many beautiful happenings. And it will be our endeavor over the next few satsangs, possibly, to go through the beginning, the journey, the ending, everything about the 1968 trip to the African continent by our beloved Bhagwan. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and absolutely, it's historic nonetheless. But as you said, it's more than historic, because it actually gives us a glimpse of what Swami really stood for. You know, we know that Swami had invitation from all around the world, even when we were students, which was like 90s and 2000s. You can only imagine what it would have been in the 60s and 70s. And among all those invitations, Swami chose to honor this one. And among all the countries that Swami could visit, Swami visited Africa. And the explanation that Swami gave for that before and after the trip, all of this actually gives us a glimpse into what Swami really stood for. And as all other satsangs, you know, whenever we take a topic, especially topics centered around Swami's life, it gives us a better understanding of this phenomenon that we came to, you know, love. And in that sense, this African trip is going to give us a peek into what Swami really stood for. Because one thing, you know, it only whenever Professor Kasturi would speak about the African trip, he would narrate that incident of him translating Swami's discourse. And when Swami said, you know, this whole universe is my house.
I prapanchame na illu,
Swami said. And Professor Kasturi was translating, he said, this entire world is Swami's mansion.
In fact, Prem, you know, I was reading about Professor Kasturi writing of this precise incident. Mm-hmm. Actually, this episode happened on the day after they returned from Africa.
Right.
I think the 15th of July. And in Dharmakshetra, where this discourse was being delivered, Kasturi writes that he was on one end of the stage, and Swami was on the other end,
right,
on the far end. So they were not like standing next to each other the way we have seen in the later years. And Swami said, "I prapanchame na illu," and Kasturi Garu translated it as, "The world is my mansion." And Swami suddenly turned towards him and gestured to him in what seemed like a slightly irritated kind of face. And Kasturi was wondering what happens. And he writes that Swami turned and started walking towards him, beckoning him also to come. And he writes that in those few seconds, he thought Swami is going to scold him and send him off the stage, or he has done something wrong, he was wondering. And then he saw that Swami was trying to tell him something. But because the gap between them was so far, he was not able to hear Swami over the crowd. So they walk close, and in the center of the stage when they meet, Swami says, "Not the world, the universe." Translated as, "The universe is my mansion." And Swami walks back to his mic, and Kasturi, as he's walking back to his translator's podium, his jaw has almost dropped in awe at the supreme self-confidence of, you know, here is this being whom Kasturi has experienced divine miracles with, but that 5'2" being standing there and saying, you know, very casually, when you say something very casually, it is only possible if it is the absolute truth. Because when you have to lie, when you have to tell something that you don't believe in, some kind of effort has to be made. That is possibly the reason I think everyone is told to speak the truth, because it is the most easiest to speak the truth. You need not make any special efforts to speak the truth. And even if you have to repeat it 100 times, it comes out as it is, because it is the truth. You have to make in efforts, you have to make in lot of things only when it's not the truth or when it's not natural. The way Swami said it casually, like, hey, no, you got it wrong, you know. The world is not my mansion, the universe is my mansion. He knew that moment there, the clouds had been parted and Swami had given him a peek at his reality. And it is precisely that kind of peek at his reality that we will get throughout this African tour.
Absolutely, because you know, when Professor Kasturi would talk about this, it's not just about the choice of words which Swami wanted him to use, but you know, when he said this prapancham is illu, and Swami said, and he said mansion, in his mind Professor Kasturi was thinking, not a house, not a home, not an abode, a mansion. How suiting it is for Swami's personality, he said. And he felt very happy that I chose the word mansion in the place of a
house,
you know,
or house, home,
or even a temple, you know. He said a mansion. And that's when Swami corrected him and said, not the world, but the universe. And many times, the reason why this is very special is, when other devotees, because in 68 was a very long time ago, and other devotees would point to this visit of Swami and say, Swami, you went to East Africa, why didn't you come to North America, why didn't you come to Australia? When other invitations came by, Swami said, no, I did not go to any other country. Swami would say, one thing is, it was just another room of my mansion I walked into. The other thing Swami would say is, a devotee called me and I visited a devotee's house. That devotee's house happened to be in Africa, that's all it is. And that again showing that Swami was not here to visit countries, but he was always ready to visit homes of devotees, giving us what would actually draw us to his house, I mean, draw him to our house in that sense. But that is what, as I said, the African trip stands for.
That is one side of the story, Prem, where Swami says that I am not here to visit countries, I am not here to visit places, I am waiting for you to welcome me into your home. And as he said, as you rightly said, Swami said that I visited a home of a devotee, it just happened to be in Africa, so I had to go there. On the other side, when we look at it, in the 1960s, that was the time when African continent was actually awakening, you know, awakening to political freedom, to political independence, breaking the shackles of not just slavery and apartheid, but also breaking economic shackles, social shackles. It was struggling to grow its wings and take off. And it was often called the dark continent. And many reasons, you know. Of course, there is that, the way that people would speak on the color of the skin and call it dark continent. The other reason that they would call it the dark continent is because it was a continent that held unexplored mysteries and it would throw up so many surprises. At the same time, it was also a continent that seemed to be far disconnected from the modern growth development that was taking place elsewhere in the world, especially Europe and Americas, and it was cut off, and therefore it was the dark continent. So in every sense it was the dark continent. And you know, just thinking of it, Prem, it makes us feel so wonderful that among all the things that Swami had to choose from, he picked up the dark continent. You know, it when I was reading that, it took me back to what we were discussing when we spoke about the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. When God had to make a choice of taking an avatarhood, when he had everything that he could choose the most affluent countries to be born in, he could have chosen the most powerful parents to be born to. When he had all those choices, the kind of choices that he made seems so different from the kind of choices any one of us would logically make if we want to change the world. If I want to change the world, I want to be born in a very advanced country to very rich parents with lot of money. But Swami chose a place which was unknown, which was not even on the postal map of India. He was born to parents who would struggle to feed him even twice or thrice a day. You know, why does he make such kind of choices? And at that time, going through that whole satsang, it was a revelation for us that Bhagwan makes these choices to show that if you have purity and selflessness, everything else doesn't matter. And this seems like a natural extension to that same message, because when he could, as you said, he could choose, there were 9, 10 dozens of invitations coming from United States of America itself. There were so many other invitations from Australia, from Europe, so many other countries. But Swami picked up the Dark Continent, and I'm sure ever since Swami stepped foot there, I don't think we can call Africa the Dark Continent. It is indeed the Blessed Continent, because other than India, I think the next place where the avatar has been is Africa.
And many times, you know, referring to these invitations that Swami would get, Swami would say that there are enough people, which I think, I don't know if it's Professor Kasturi's usage or Swami himself used that terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said there are enough jet gurus, you know, who keep jetting around the world and giving their message. Swami said, people will come to me, I don't need to go anywhere. And if anything needs to go, it's the message which will be carried by my devotees. And that's what, you know, Swami stood for. And the whole event, as we described, it happened at a very, very historic moment, because the African trip was historic in itself, but what preceded that was also a very historic event. And that's what was this, almost like, you know, the precursor for this African trip.
I think that would be the perfect beginning point for our discussion of the trip to Africa. That is the first ever world conference of the Sri Sathya Sai organizations that was held in the May of 1968 at Dharmakshetra. I think if we start our story from that point in time, we would be making a very logical beginning. You know, again, one more disclaimer here. As we were talking in the Bhagavata Vahini, what Swami has written there, Swami says that if you take up a saptaham on the Bhagavatam and say you finished the Bhagavatam, you started it and ended it, it's like saying you finished counting the waves. Your count begins when you start counting, and your count ends when you stop counting. That doesn't actually describe the entire ocean and its waves. It is just when you began counting it and when you stopped counting it. In the same way, you know, in our bookstore, I found this book called The Glory of Sathya Sai in Africa. Reading that book itself, you realize that, you know, the African visit has not yet ended. It goes on even to this day, because what spark Swami kindled there, the way it has grown into conflagrations, it has grown into huge fires lending warmth to so many people, it's amazing. So I don't think we can ever say that we have completed the discussion on Swami's African Odyssey. It, just like the Bhagavatam, it has no beginning and no end, but we choose to make our beginning at the world, we choose to make our beginning and ending at Dharmakshetra. So we begin at Dharmakshetra with the World Conference in May 1968.
Right, and just before that, Dharmakshetra itself was inaugurated, I think, right? In 1968 was the time when Swami's abode in Mumbai was inaugurated.
May 11th, I think.
Right, in Dharmakshetra, which was, yes, you know, becoming the center of this entire conference. Of course, you know, that was a complete, I mean, that also contrasts this visit to Africa in a sense, because, you know, here was Swami as the head of this conference, world conference, which was being held. You had people from all over, around the world coming for this conference, all around India coming for this conference. And Professor Kasturi, of course, writes, the number of dignitaries were present at the inauguration of this conference. All the top members of the Legislative Assembly of Maharashtra and some central ministers. You had, I think Morarji Desai was there, who was the Deputy Prime Minister, if I'm not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these were the dignitaries who were there. And
and there were about 1,700 delegates.
Of course, 1,700 delegates were there. And this also marked a very important event for the movement, the Sai movement as such. Mm. Because it really was placed on the international map, if we can say it was not placed till then. Because, I mean, the number of countries that Professor Kasturi mentions when he's talking about this conference, I mean, it really surprises you, how did Swami's name spread to so many countries? And even when we are going to talk about this Africa trip, the fact that Swami's devotees were already there, it really surprises you. In fact, one of those devotees whom we'll be talking about, Dr. Gadia and his family, they came to Swami in almost the early 60s or late 50s. You know, even though they are from East Africa, you know, central part of Africa, born and brought up there for generations, they knew of Swami and they were coming to Swami even before the Africa trip. As you were saying, that Africa trip created so much of the, you know, so many devotees came up there, and Sai movement started off there. But even before Swami could go there, there was a huge following there, and that's really surprising.
That's precisely the reason why I said it's like counting the waves. Right. We think that Swami's sojourn began in June 1968, but as you said, before he went there itself, it's already there. So it's like no beginning, no end, no end. We just choose our beginning and our end. Speaking of the 1968 discourse, I mean, speaking of the 1968 World Conference, the discourse that Bhagwan gave on the 17th of May, you know, again is very epochal, because that discourse is a sort of an overview of Swami's mission. And there Swami speaks of how he is going to revive the Vedic heritage. And he emphasized that the only hope for mankind is in Namasmarana. And while speaking on Namasmarana and chanting of the name of the Lord, he spoke about the name and form that we love, that of Satya Sai. And I think that was the time he made, one of those few occasions when he made that statement that thrilled all our hearts, right?
Right, exactly. Probably I should just read out those lines, because for the first time in an open discourse, not first time, one of those rare occasions, as you said, when Swami spoke of his real divinity. Because
and what an occasion it was, when you have that many people gathered.
Swami said in Telugu, Sarva Devata Swarupalanu Darinchina Manavakarame I Akaramu. This human form is one in which every divine entity, every divine principle, that is to say, all the names and forms ascribed by man to God are manifest. And Swami went on to say that such is the form which is standing in front of you, and you are being led by a form like this. How fortunate you all are.
And having said that, Prem, this would have been the most perfect and ripe stage, you know, for Swami to expand the number of his followers, right? But it's very surprising that on such a big stage, what Swami said was totally different. Swami said, I have not got the slightest intention to utilize the Seva Samitis or the service organizations for propagating my name or canvassing homage for my name. On one hand, he is saying that this is the Sarva Devata Tita Swarupa. All names and forms are embodied in this name and form. And then he says, but I have not started this for canvassing my name. No, I am content only when spiritual endeavors and disciplines to elevate and purify man are progressing elsewhere, are progressing everywhere. So he made it very clear that though this is your good fortune, though this is your blessing, I don't want you. In fact, it's almost short of saying, I actively prohibit you from going and, you know, paying homage to my name and forcing others to pay homage to my name. The objective is to increase spiritual endeavor and discipline. And that too he explained. He explained that the only goal of human life is to recognize the divine in all. And this is a spiritual endeavor that has to be encouraged everywhere in the world.
And even as we were relating that statement, I can't help holding myself but narrating an incident, which was again narrated by one of our alumni who happened to have a very close connection with Swami's Africa trip. Because he is Dr. Naveen Patel, who joined Swami's college after Swami's Africa trip.
Okay.
Right? And Swami had asked him and his brother to come and join Swami's college in Vrindavan. So he was a first batch student. And I was listening to his interview to, of course, get some details about the Africa trip itself, where the interviewer asks him, what is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for you? You know, who is he? How do you look at him? And he just said, yeah, he's God. I mean, there is nothing more than that. So that's not surprising. Many devotees would answer like that. Then he goes on to say, because that's what he said. He said on many, many occasions, when we would ask Swami as students, Swami, who are you? Swami would say, I am the same person who came as Krishna and Rama and all of these divinity. I am the same one. And Swami would say it so casually, as you said, the truth was so casual and so simple, it didn't need any, you know, ornamentation. Swami said, that's what it is. And then he goes on to narrate one very, very beautiful and profound incident. He says, in those days after Swami's lunch, Swami would recline on his bed in the room, and some of these students would be given the opportunity to do Padaseva for Swami. So he was sitting by Swami and he was pressing Swami's feet, and Swami was taking his pan. You know, those days Swami was eating pan, so there was this small table in front of him where all of these things which went in to making that pan was
the
there.
Beetle leaf,
the beetle leaf, the beetle nut, and that chunam, what we call. So Swami was taking a a betel leaf, putting chunnam in that and putting all of that, and he was eating. Suddenly Swami took one of those leaves and Swami asked, "Hey Naveen, what is this?" So he said, "Swami, it's a betel leaf." Okay. Then Swami started folding it and Swami said, "What is this?" He said, "It's still a betel leaf. It was just folded to look like a semicircle." Right? So he said, "Swami, it's still a betel leaf." Then, he's just sitting almost like he can stretch and touch Swami's head. That's the distance he's sitting. Right? So Swami shows him that leaf, blows at it, and he sees right in front of his eye that it is turned into a medallion.
Hmm.
Okay? It's an enamel medallion with a silver or gold encasing. And on the enamel, there is a picture of Lord Rama. Okay? He says, "So what is this?" So he says, "Swami, it's a medallion with the picture of Rama." Then again Swami blows at it, now it becomes Krishna. Okay? Then again Swami blows at it, it becomes an image of Jesus Christ. And when all this is going on, suddenly Professor Kasturi comes in and he has got some agenda, wants to get some instructions from Swami. And Brother Naveen Patel is sitting there and he's thinking that if Swami does not give the medallion to Kasturi, then he might give it to me.
Hmm.
Right? So he was sitting there and he was hoping that Kasturi should finish fast and go so that I can get this medallion. Right? So then Professor Kasturi asked some questions, Swami answered him and he left. And then Swami continued. What was I telling you? What was this?
Continue with the demonstration.
So then again Swami blew at it and showed him. And this time when Swami showed him, that image had the Vishwavirat Swarupa. What we call the Vishwarupa of, you could see Vishnu with the many heads. And in the heart of that image was the image of Swami and Shirdi Baba. So Swami asked him, "What is this?" So he said, "Swami, I've heard that this is what is called the Vishwavirat. I'm not too sure, but I've heard that this is what it is." Swami said, "Yes, it is Vishwavirat Swarupa." So he was waiting. "Oh, Swami is going to give this to me. Swami is going to give this to me." And Swami said, "It is Vishwavirat Swarupa." I showed it to him. And Swami opened his mouth and swallowed it. And he was sitting there, he didn't know what to do. Swami just swallowed it and Swami looked at him and said, "It is me, it is me." He said, "All of this what I showed you, it is me." And to kind of really rub it in and drive it in, Swami ate that medallion right in front of him and Swami said, "It is me."
Prem, it might be slightly like a digression, but definitely in relation to what you said, two things I got reminded of. One was something that happened in public, which I have, which it has been, I think, captured on tape and photographs also, is that Swami had materialized a silver lingam, and he materialized it, and he showed it. It was, it was not like some occasion, simply Swami materialized it and he had shown it, and we were all sitting there, and naturally the bhajan got more tempo, more gusto. Somehow, we feel that, right? Mm-hmm. Though it's the same Purnavatar there always, even to this day, it's the same Purnavatar. But the moment Swami walks out, we straighten. But once Swami sits, after half an hour, we again slouch. And when Swami materializes, again we straighten. Because we feel those are the moments where there's some extra divinity or God knows what it is. But there's definitely extra excitement. So the bhajans were going on in full enthusiasm there. And Swami took the lingam, just put it in his mouth, swallowed it. and the thing is, it was, as you say, so casual and so natural, no much ado about it, nothing, no explanation given after that, nothing. He just swallowed it and then he said aarti, went in. Don't know what happened after that. It's still a mystery for me to this day also. That is one thing that I was reminded of. The other thing was a very interesting thing narrated by one student of the music college. I don't know if you remember him.
Mm-hmm.
A student by name Anant. He mm-hmm. was one among those four boys who Swami gave the great blessing of singing for him outside as well as at his residence for almost a month, they would go and sing. So he was recollecting those days and he narrated something very interesting. He said that one day Swami materialized for him a, what is the currency of South Africa? Rand, yeah. Mm-hmm. He materialized a rand, one rand or five rand, I don't know what it is, but one coin. And he said, "You keep this." He felt so happy, he kept it. And he says, because Swami has given that, you carry it with you, especially when you are going for darshan and all that, right? Next day again, Swami calls him in the interview room or whatever and tells him, "Give that back." Takes it off. So he said, "Oh God, I lost that." Means Swami had told him not to tell anyone. He had got the rand, but now it's gone back. And he says again, next day Swami materialized something else for him. I'm not remembering the different details, but four or five things. He also skipped. He didn't go through the details. But Swami will materialize and give him maybe one idol. And next day Swami will give it back. He kept doing this and he felt, Swami, you have actually given me so many things. But I don't have anything with me, you know, like as a memorabilia or as a proof or anything. And he says, one day Swami again waved his hand, materialized a gold biscuit. I told, take this. He kept that gold biscuit in his wallet. And then he thought, you know what, at least this, Swami, allow me to keep it. So he decided that what he would do is, he would conveniently forget his wallet in the hostel. So the Swami calls him and tells, give me the gold biscuit. Oh, Swami, I forgot. And he felt that next day again, Swami would bring something else up and hopefully he will forget about the gold biscuit and it will remain there. That was his plan, he said. So he went and as expected, Swami called him in the interview room and said, give that. He says, he was about to say that, Swami, I have forgotten it in the hostel.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami says, I know it's in your pocket. And he says, he felt for his pocket and his wallet was there. He says, to this day, I don't know how I did not forget it or how it came back. I don't know, because I had made up my mind. I had thought so intensely that I'm going to forget my wallet. And then he pulled out his wallet and it was there. He gave back the piece of gold, you know, and gave back the biscuit to Swami. He says, at that moment, Swami said, every day Swami is giving you something and taking it back. Why Swami is doing that? Swami asked him. He had no idea. In fact, he was also wondering why Swami is doing that. Why don't you leave something with me? That was his query. When he had no idea, Swami said, see, when I give you what joy you receive it from, receive it from me with what joy? Do you have the same joy when you give it back? Because Swami then said, see, in this world, everything is going to be like this. Everything that you get will be what I am giving. Everything that you lose will be what I am taking. Can you have the equanimity to give it back to me with the same joy and peace with which you accept it from me? And, you know, Anand says that has been the fulcrum for his life. Because he says, even to this day, and even as he was speaking this, he pulled out his wallet. He said, see, I never have more than 200 rupees in my wallet at any point in time. But I don't have to worry. Because I know if it is not there, he has taken it. And when I need, he is going to give it. And he says that message has got imprinted so deeply. You know, that is, this episode is a nice one to highlight what Swami said in that, again, 1968 discourse, where he said, you elaborate in your lectures the unique powers of Sai, the incidents that are described as miracles in books written on me by some persons. But I request you not to attach importance to these. Do not exaggerate their significance. The most significant and important power is, let me tell you, my prema or love. So miracles are just props that he uses to shower his love and teach us lessons and give us insights that will stand us in good stead throughout this life and lives that we are going to lead hereafter as well. You know, this is what triggered when you narrated that episode.
Right. And you know, I would just like to read three or four lines from Professor Kasturi's description of this whole event.
The 1968 World Conference.
Because you were saying that it really was in many ways all continents coming from all directions and saying, Swami, our hope lies at your feet. Our hope lies in light, lies in your message. And he, you know, in four lines, he just says that how different people represented this through their words when they spoke in Swami's presence.
Mm.
You know, he says, Howard Muffett from Australia said, Australia needs your love, your light. Tideman Johannesson from Norway confessed, your teachings, your guidance are urgently needed in Scandinavia, where dogma has very nearly suppressed genuine spiritual yearning. Dr. Nallai Nathan from Ceylon pleaded, we are children groping in the dark, make us see. Dr. C.G. Patel from Kampala prayed, Africa needs you most. Indra Devi from Tecate, Mexico said, when I speak about Bhagwan to the students of Santa Barbara, Berkeley, Chicago and other colleges, they refuse to disperse after the talk unless I promise that I would bring Baba to America. They are hungry for him. Charles Penn from Los Angeles asserted, we look to India for spiritual guidance. We pray that Baba will come to us. When he is with us, he will be with everyone else too.
Wow.
So in one paragraph, Professor Kasturi describes how all of them pined for Swami spiritually as well as physically, right?
Definitely, because you know, each of those names that you mentioned trigger in us memories and incidents and so many wonderful experiences. You know, just when you said Tideman, I recollect, I think Tideman was the person who lost his ring in the Ganga, and Swami pulled it out in the interview room, the exact same ring, and gave it back to him. I mean, so many incidents, whether it's Indira Devi or Howard Murfitt or Charles Penn, everybody has so many experiences, and they're saying all this. You know, it reminded me of what you shared some time ago of how the seed for the African trip was actually sown during this world conference, how it happened. I think you should narrate that to our listeners as well. I think you told that it was told by Naveen Patel.
Right. Dr. Naveen Patel, who happened to be very close to C.G. Patel, Dr. C.G. Patel and his family, who were the, you know, devotees to visit whom Swami went. As Swami said, I went only to a devotee's house. That devotee was Dr. C.G. Patel,
Dr. Chotabhai G. Patel.
So apparently, you know, it was a world conference, and we've seen conferences in Swami's presence. They would have report reading, right? The different regions of the organization would come and present a report of what they're doing, the activities they're doing. So they had these different units from India, of course, were coming, and they were, of course, doing a lot of work. You know, Balvikas, I think, had been established by then, was quite active. Seva organization was already, you know, taking roots. So each of them had reports running into 45 minutes to 1 hour. So Swami had to cut down all those reports. Swami said 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And then they had reports from, like as Kasturi was writing, all of these people from different countries were also giving their reports. Then finally, when it had to be the report from Africa, they told Dr. C.G. Patel, who was the head of the organization there, to come and make the report. So he had nothing to say because nothing was happening in Africa really in that sense. So he came up to the podium and he gave a three-sentence report almost. He said, Swami, we don't do much activity in Africa, but we have a center and we do bhajans every Thursday religiously without missing that. Swami, we love you a lot and we want you to come to Africa. That was probably the most innocuous of invitations that he ever made. You know, but that was the invitation that Swami chose to honor, because that was not the first time that he was calling Swami, right?
Exactly. As Dr. Kishan Gadia narrates, 9 times before this, they had actually made all the plans and done all the bookings as well for Swami to travel to Africa. But on all the 9 other times, it had got cancelled for divine reasons, of course. And this was a time when they hardly expected. They just said, Swami, you should come. And Swami suddenly says, yes, I'm coming. And who knew that in May this world conference was happening? 1 month later, 50 days down the line, Swami would be flying across the Indian Ocean, across the oceans to the African continent. Nobody would have imagined it. But today, in retrospect, when we look back, we can see a lot of hints that Swami had dropped. In that same discourse, Swami had said, I have resolved to enfold the people of the world in the fostering care of universal love as laid down in the Vedas. You know, for the world is my mansion and the continents are the halls therein. I have come to inscribe a golden chapter in the history of humanity, wherein falsehood will fail, truth will triumph, virtue will reign, character will confer power and knowledge, character will confer power, not knowledge, inventive skill or wealth. Wisdom will be enthroned in the Council of Nations. You know, beautiful words. Swami made this declaration, and today when we look back, we can think that, wow, here is definitely a strong clue about Swami's impending visit to some place. But at that time, that moment, nobody had imagined it. And Swami's trip got planned, the visit to Africa, and Swami was due to take off on the 30th of June from Mumbai. And to go further into this trip, what happened, I think we will take a little break at this point in time. Dear listeners, don't go away anywhere, because on the other side of the break, we will continue with this African Odyssey.
जपते रहो मन में सायरा
जपते रहो मन में
सायरा जपते रहो मन में सायरा
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the middle of a very, very beautiful reminiscence for all of us of Swami's only trip, and we should emphasize physically, to a different country. You know, because many, many times, even as in Satyam Shyam Sundaram and all the other descriptions, Professor Kasturi will be quick to point out that this is only the sole physical trip that Swami made. because so many times they have been witness to the fact that, you know, when they were in Swami's presence, Swami would suddenly rush off somewhere, and that could be anywhere, that could be in any country, anywhere.
Mm.
And we were talking about how, you know, it must have been a very, very short time, because I think till 18th of May, the conference was still going on, the World Conference, 16th, 17th, and 18th, or 17th, 18th, and 19th is the World Conference. And Swami probably made up his mind to go to Africa, and he was traveling in less than 2 weeks. That must have been really quick, and in those 2 weeks, Swami was going back to Puttaparthi probably, or Whitefield, and coming back.
I think possibly he was at Whitefield in Vrindavan, because when I was narrating, sharing about our satsang today to my father, he was saying that he has a very fond memory of going to the Bangalore airport to see off Swami. And I asked, where was Swami leaving? Because Swami took off for Africa from Bombay. He said, no, Swami was leaving to Bombay. And we all knew that Swami is going to go to Africa from Bombay. So, you know, we went to see him off at the Bangalore airport. So, I think, as you said, they had just 2 weeks to get everything in place and readied, the travelers, the who will be traveling along with Swami, as well as receiving Swami in Nairobi,
right.
Kenya, where he landed, as well as in Kampala, which is in Uganda.
Right.
I think Swami visited three countries during this visit, that is Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, the three countries that border Lake Victoria. You know, I just can't help but get metaphorical and possibly draw out so many inferences, but it was amazing for me. I just felt, you know, Lake Victoria is very special.
Mm-hmm.
It spans thousands of kilometers. It's not actually a lake, it's an ocean. It's a freshwater ocean. It gives birth to the River Nile, and how poetically Kasturi defines it. He says that this is the freshwater ocean that the Nile tries in vain to drain. It tries to drain out the longest and the most magnificent river in the world is not able to drain out Lake Victoria. And this Nile flows from Lake Victoria northward to the Mediterranean Sea, and you know, it brings life and light everywhere where it flows. Is it a coincidence that, again, you know, Swami also was traveling to that very spot? These three countries, actually imagine this Lake Victoria, it goes into four countries. And these are the three countries that border Lake Victoria: Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, and there's one more country, I am not getting the name, towards the southwest part of the lake. So Swami was visiting exactly these three countries. It was almost like how physically the River Nile that emerges from this Lake Victoria nourishes the whole of Africa. This will be the spot which will spiritually nourish the whole of Africa.
Right, and you know, the more you talk about Africa and the situation in Africa when Swami visited, I mean, it only shows that they really needed more than anything else, they needed something which was unifying them. Because, you know, when we study about the history, the political history of Africa, the African continent was literally shared by European forces over a table, right?
They were cut up like bread pieces.
I mean, straight lines are seen as boundaries even today, and that actually was the worst thing to do to Africa, because they lived in such small tribes, and because of communication being so less, culture did not travel from one place to the other. They had very, very unique and distinct cultures. And to be broken up as nations without considering that. And that is why, you know, in spite of winning their independence from the colonial forces, they took so many years to reorganize themselves, because they were not in countries themselves. I mean, it was not like in India. I mean, India was always a subcontinent which was an entity by itself, which very easily could become a country. It was not the case with Africa, where, you know, all of these tribal forces. And that's why even when Swami went, you know, he actually met with many of those small tribes. I mean, greeted by many of those small tribes. And,
Separately, though they're from the same country.
Yeah, though from the same country.
And as you said, Prem, even to this day, for example, I think recently Sudan broke up into Sudan and South Sudan.
Endless conflict in all of these places.
Yes, and break up, because as you said, They were apparently integrated and made as per the convenience of the colonial masters. You know, it's almost like Spain, Portugal, Britain, they sit on a table and they say, okay, this part of Africa is yours, this is mine. And when they leave and go, those things become separate countries without actually thinking about, as you said, whether they're culturally united or not. And it was in the early 1960s. For example, if I remember right, Kenya became independent in 1963 and became a republic in 1964. Uganda became independent in 1962 and became a republic in 1963. So, as Kasturi describes, Swami was visiting the infant republics of the Dark Continent. The countries that Swami was visiting had been countries only for the past 4 or 5 years. And they were fledgling. They were like infants requiring the nourishing milk of the mother, and the Divine Mother decided to respond.
And even as we are talking about the preparations to go to Africa, we have to mention this sweet incident which involves Mother Ishwarama, right? Because finally the rumor starts spreading that Swami is going to Africa. And, I mean, India was also a fledgling republic in that sense. Today we celebrate our Republic Day in 1968. Must have been probably, when India was 18 years old.
A teenage republic, India was.
Must be going through the adolescent tantrums, maybe. And I don't know, we've still not got over
the tantrums.
Right. So here was Swami, and from India, Swami is going to Africa, and I think there was enough rumor about Africa itself, because it reached Mother Ishwarama's ears that Swami is traveling to Africa with the different dark descriptions of Africa, where she was told that that country is filled with wild animals, and even worse, it's filled with cannibal savages who eat other men. And here is Swami going to that place, and they're all so tall, 6.5 feet, 7 feet tall, huge giants who live on trees and tree houses. And who knows what is going to happen to Swami. And Swami was so, Ishwarama was so disturbed by it, and she went and apparently fought with Professor Kasturi and these other people who are arranging for this trip. I think even Indulal Shah was there. Swami said, what are you doing with my son? Where are you taking him? You're taking him to this dark continent. What will happen if he was to be devoured by all these animals and savages? And that's when Professor Kasturi smiles and at this innocence of this mother and says, Amma, don't you know he is the Lord of the universe, and he's just come back after making a declaration like that.
Swami made the declaration, I am Sarva Devata Tita Swarupa.
Right. He's the divinity, he's God himself. Why do you have to fear for him like this? And Mother Ishwarama, in all her innocence, says, you fool Kasturi, you know it, I know it, but do the wild animals in Africa know it?
Know that he is God. You know that he is God. I know he is God.
Right.
What about them? They don't know. Real, real sweet. That, because for a mother, a child is a child. You know, the child may become however old, however, however great, however big. But for a mother, the child is a child. And the same was the case with Mother Ishwarama. I don't know if it's exactly in this context or some other context, but in one of the contests, actually, Kasturi promises Mother Ishwarama that I will use the all-powerful Gayatri mantra to keep Swami safe and protected. You don't worry. Okay. I don't know if it's... I think it's mostly for the African visit only. Mm. He assures Ishwarama that I will use this mantra and protect him, so nothing will happen to him. And then Ishwarama feels a little relieved.
This is Mother Ishwarama's love for Swami. But, this is where probably Swami was standing out as an ideal. Because even Swami took all the necessary steps that he had to take to assure Ishwarama. He wanted to ensure that Ishwarama was comfortable and was reassured. Because when we spoke to Ms. Rani Java, the daughter of the industrialist Java of Joy Ice Creams, he was from Bombay, and of course he was about to join Swami's entourage to Africa. Hmm. But Swami told him, no, you stay back here because I want to leave Mother Ishwarama in your house. You take care of Mother Ishwarama when I'm away. So Swami ensured that she was, in Bombay and not back in Puttaparthi or Bangalore, so that she will be the first person to see Swami off. She will be the last person to see Swami off when he's going, and she will be able to see Swami as soon as he lands back in the country. He ensured that would happen. And also Rani Java says that when Swami was away in Africa, every opportunity that Swami got, Swami would call back to Java's home in Bombay and speak to Mother Ishwarama to assure her that he is fine.
That is what struck me also. That is another reason why Swami must have told her to be in Mumbai, because in the Indian cities, Mumbai is one of the most advanced, and
right,
possibly telephone connections existed properly between Africa and Mumbai alone. because, you know, later on during the African visit, we will come across that, where Swami and the entourage watches a television. Mm-hmm. And Kasturi Garu writes that some members of the entourage were watching a TV for the first time in their life. You know, when I read that statement, I was just wondering, oh, first time in 1968. And I went to the history of television in India, and you get to know that it's only somewhere in 1982 that TV became a thing that households can have. And up to 1975, TV transmission was there only for 7 cities in India.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 1975. So, really, really, it is tough for us who, tougher even us who have been born in 1980s. What to talk of the generations after 2000 or in the 90s. They will not be able to imagine a world that was so isolated in those years. No wonder Africa was called Dark Continent. Because the world itself was dark in that sense. Today, you know, you want to see the places, you read in Satyam Chimsundaram, each place name that I saw, Prem, I just go and there are YouTube videos of each of those places.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get a feel of what Kasturi is describing and see how it is. In those days, that was not available even to advanced countries. I mean, people had to just listen to descriptions of even places like America or Europe. What to say of Africa? It was such a dark continent, and I just felt like sharing this in order to emphasize on what primitive conditions actually existed in Africa of those days.
Right, and quite understandably, Madhya Sharma was so worried. In fact, you know, in that period when Swami was there, you know, that's when she stays in Bombay. It is actually starts off another journey of Swami's educational institutions. We'll probably come to that when we come to that. But these were the arrangements that Swami apparently made before he took off from Bombay to Africa finally the last day of May.
Second last day of June, on 29th of June, there was actually a massive public meeting held at Dharmakshetra in order to bid Swami bon voyage, because those were times when, forget Africa, traveling abroad itself was considered like a very, scary thing. Very reluctantly, people would allow their children or allow their family members to travel, as I said, even to advanced countries via ship and such things. So, there was a kind of a huge gathering that had come to give a send-off to Swami. And as Kasturi writes it, on the morning of the 30th of June, which was a Sunday, the takeoff was scheduled from Mumbai, and it was via a Boeing 707 aircraft. And this airport in Mumbai was brimming. It was brimming completely. Every possible spot had been taken up, and there was an ocean of humanity waving there to Swami as he got into the aircraft. And Swami too, I think we have got a footage or a photo of that. Mm-hmm. With a kerchief in his hand, he waves out from the aircraft, because possibly his hand is so tiny that you can't see it. So with an extension of the kerchief, he waves it to everybody in the airport before actually taking off towards Africa.
Right, and that's when finally Swami, at 9 o'clock in the morning, I think, he takes off from the airport in Bombay, as we said, the Boeing 707, with many of these devotees joining Swami. But Swami was again traveling in a regular flight. It was not a chartered flight. So there were many others in the flight who were, you know, regular people who were traveling, who were suddenly surprised to find that, you know, here is this Bhagwan Shri Satsai Baba, who is a co-passenger. So many of them actually came and took Swami's Pad Namaskar. They had, you know, that was the, probably if it had happened now, it would have been the selfie culture. But then they took autographs from Swami. And so Swami wrote small notes and autographed it for them.
And, you know, you're speaking of those who were surprised with Swami on the plane. There was a section of people who traveled all the way to Nairobi. They were not on Bhagwan's entourage, but they traveled simply for the joy of traveling with the avatar of the age. So many had booked their tickets. I'm sure any one of us would have been ready to do that if we could afford it, to travel along with Swami, book along with Swami and go, even if it means putting all our life savings into that. So while there was a section of people who were surprised with Bhagwan on the aircraft, there was a section that had come well planned, and possibly this was a section that had already got their autograph books and pens and everything ready. And there's one incident, interesting incident that Kasturi records in the Satyam Shivasundaram, of a certain Bob Raymer. Bob Raymer is a devotee from Los Angeles, and he finds mention in the book Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. He is one of the first people that Howard Murfitt meets when he comes to India, when he gets to know about Swami. And like Howard Murfitt, Bob Raymer too was on a quest, spiritual quest, wanting to find out, wanting to delve more into his own self and grow spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
He had gone to different masters in different places before finding fulfillment in Bhagwan, just like Howard Murfitt.
Okay.
So this Bob Raymer and his wife, I think, were also accompanying Swami. And he was sitting in the aircraft and he saw that it was a long flight. So Swami, in order to relax his feet, he lifted his feet and placed it on the seat in front.
Mm-hmm.
And he was stretching. He just couldn't resist the temptation to pull out his camera and take a few shots, few photographs of Swami's feet resting on the back of the seat.
Mm-hmm.
And as he took this, Swami noticed that. So Swami wrote a little note, you know, almost playfully admonishing him, telling him that, hey, no, you don't do all these. In fact, in those days, I think photography on aircraft were not allowed at all.
Okay.
Today, they're not able to stop it with camera phones coming. But it was not permitted. So he wrote a very friendly admonishing note to Bob Raymer. And folding the note, you know, because Bob Raymer was seated maybe 2-3 seats behind, folding the note, Swami cutely addressed it also. He wrote it to Bob. And address, he wrote it as Boeing 707. You know, imagine, so cute. To Bob, Boeing 707. And when this was sent to Bob Raymer, Bob Raymer received it. And he quickly pulled out a little piece of paper. He wrote something and sent it back to Swami. And on that, he had written, you know, nothing phenomenal in what he wrote, but it's very, very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
He had written, "The sky is blue, the ocean too. Our wish has come true, we are flying with you." You know, he was so thrilled. And so this little exchange took place and Kasturi was witness to this whole thing and he felt it was very sweet. It was definitely very sweet. Like as you said, this was one among the several notes that Swami wrote that day for the devotees who hungered for his autograph or a memorabilia from him in some way or the other.
Right, and of course Professor Kasturi writes that though Bob Raymer wrote the sky is blue, it was not blue all the while. Because he says that even as we were going towards Africa, the monsoon clouds were coming from Africa towards the Indian subcontinent. So it was quite, gloomy in that sense. I mean, cloudy, not really gloomy. Because Swami was with them and even as they were going, you know, just that idea of, I'm sure many of them in that entourage might also be traveling for the first time. I think Raja Reddy was traveling with Swami.
Yes.
These are all people who have spent almost a good part of their adult life with Swami. They wouldn't have traveled much with Swami. Wherever they traveled, it was traveling with Swami. So many of them must be traveling for the first time by air. And it's really a thrill. And all that you need is probably a childlike person like Swami sitting next to you, enjoying it the way, you know, that really completes a travel which is so special like this. Because we've seen with Swami, you know, even when it is the Kodai trip and we hear from students, they say that here is a trip which Swami is making 100 million times, you know, to the Pillar Rock, to the Cascade Falls, which Swami has seen so many times. But every time Swami would have the same enthusiasm because he knows that the boys who are coming with him are coming for the first time and Swami will be telling. So in that sense, probably the sight that Swami is seeing from the Boeing 707 is a sight which he sees every day. Right, you know, the land masses from 35,000 feet above. But Swami was so excited. Swami was saying, see, that's the ocean, that's the mountain, that's the cloud. And they must have really had a wonderful time traveling with Swami like that.
You know, this is so beautiful because, as you said, many people are flying for the first time. And when you fly for the first time, definitely it's an enthralling experience. Even if you're a veteran, if you're a frequent flyer, flying with Swami is, at least for the first time, is really terrific. I can say from personal experience, possibly the fourth time you fly with Swami, it doesn't, you know, we are not Swami. We just can't do what Swami does. As you said, Swami does the same thing 100 times with the same enthusiasm. So possibly it decreases. Familiarity breeds neglect. And I have seen this not only with myself, but with several others. When a similar opportunity gets repeated many times, possibly diminishing marginal utility.
Mm-hmm.
The joy that you get from the first rasgulla is much more compared to the joy when you get while eating the ninth one. When you're eating the ninth rasgulla, possibly you feel enough here. I had enough. So when with Swami too, it might, you know, because if we forget, if we forget whom we are with, it can possibly happen that multiple times the same thing happens, you lose a charm. But the first time, the charm is always there. You know, I have noticed while reading, for example, the memoirs of Professor G. Venkatraman when he visited Delhi in 1999. Oh, my God, he has dedicated an entire chapter to the flight with Bhagwan. You know, so much. Because later on, he has made many several flights with Bhagwan, and when you ask him about that, doesn't seem to mention much. But possibly the first flight with Bhagwan is always very special. For example, Professor G.V. writes in that book that as we sat in the flight and we took off, I looked around, there were clouds. I was searching through the clouds, he writes. He says, I was searching to see whether there will be Narada. Because Mahavishnu is on the aircraft here, Narada should somewhere be here. You know, that is how he writes. I remember when I sat for the first time in the aircraft with Bhagwan while going to Hadshi, the crew comes and they do their standard procedure, you know, explaining the safety procedures and all. And as he was saying that in case of crash landing on water, don't worry, these things will drop, these are flotation devices, the seat will act as a flotation device, it will save you. And even as he was saying that, I was wondering, what are you telling, man? Whom are you speaking to? He is the one who is our flotation device in the Bhavasagara, and you are talking to him about these flotation devices. So, all said and done, the first flight with Bhagwan brings out the romantic in each one of us. You know, if we are able to recognize his divinity, then every visit with Bhagwan will be like that. But even to the most duds among us in spirituality, the first flight is always very thrilling. And on this flight, I'm sure many would have got this opportunity.
Right. And I'm not sure how many hours flight it is, but Swami lands in what is called the Embakasi Airport in Nairobi at 11:56 a.m.
Embakasi Airport.
Embakasi Airport at 11:56 a.m. of local time, which is probably around 2:30 of Indian time.
So 9 to 2:30 will be like 5.5 hours
Right.
Coincidentally, that Embakasi Airport was later renamed. It is today called the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport.
Okay.
After Jomo Kenyatta was the first president of Kenya. Mm-hmm. In 1963, when it got independence, he became the first president. And today that airport is named after him. At that time, it was named after the place where it located, the Embakasi Airport. And Bhagwan landed there. And after touchdown, even as the flight doors opened and Swami is coming out, Kasturi writes that they could hear the strains of the bhajan. Nandalala, Yadu Nandalala. You know, that bhajan going on. It must have been a surreal feeling, because you are thinking that I'm going away from India into far off Africa, the dark continent, and you land and the first thing you hear is something that is so familiar to you. This was just going to be the beginning. Many things followed. We'll possibly take another quick break over here at this point in time and then continue with the story of what happened after Bhagwan landed.
Guru Rabram Guru Ravishnu Guru Devo Maheshwara Guru Sakshat Parabrahma Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. As Bhagwan landed at the airport in Nairobi, the Embakasi airport, he was welcomed with the Bhajan Nandalala Yadu Nandalala. And Swami did not have any security check or anything like that. Dr. Chotabhai G. Patel, who had come there in a very floral car, that's how Kasturi describes it, because there were so many flowers on the car that you couldn't make out the make or brand of which car it was. You could just make out that it's a flowery car. And in that flowery car, Swami was whisked away. But Kasturi and the others had to go through the whole rigmarole of immigration and getting the whatever checks, everything done. But then, you know, Kasturi recollects that Swami was very, very touched with the flowers, the prayers, the aartis, everything that went on right from the moment he stepped off the aircraft. And in a letter to a devotee, Swami described of how he was reminded of Jayadeva and Gauranga seeing the devotion of the African people.
Right. Apparently, I think Dr. Patel had taken one piece of land which was beside the airport, where he had gathered all the devotees of Kenya who wanted to come and receive Swami. And they were doing bhajans there, and that was the bhajans which was heard as Swami was alighting from the flight. So even before anything else, Swami straight drove to that place where these devotees were doing bhajans, spent a few minutes there, gave them darshan and took aarti, and then started on this journey. Because from the airport, Swami had a huge distance to cover before he reached actually the place which he wanted to visit, which was Dr. C.G. Patel's house,
which was located in Kampala, the capital of Uganda.
Right.
And Swami had landed in Nairobi, the capital of Kenya.
Kenya.
So from Kenya to Uganda, you have to travel to another country. And the drive from Nairobi to Kampala is 660 kilometers. And so thus began the drive. And Kasturi describes the many scenic spots in the drive. In fact, he says he was thrilled to pass through the Great Rift Valley. The Great Rift Valley is apparently a huge crack in the African continent that extends from Egypt till almost the midway in Africa.
Okay.
It's a great valley with lot of flora and fauna. And Kasturi says that I had only read about these in books. But here I was getting to see the Great Rift Valley, and it was a lifesaver, he says, the beauty and the beauty and the kind of natural glory that he saw outside, because otherwise the journey was very, very tedious. In fact, even to this day, if you just go to YouTube and check out for a drive from Nairobi to Kampala, you will see there are bus services. You can see the road. Even as late as 2013, it's not an international class road like we would see. You can only imagine how the roads might have been in 1968. So it must have been a really, really tiring journey. In fact, it was a tiring journey, because by the time they reached Kampala, it was almost 1:30 the next day, 1:30 morning, 1:30 in the morning. So it was a real long drive. And even along the drive, different spots, Swami stopped to give darshan to devotees who had gathered. In fact, one of the first places they stopped was at a place called Nakuru. Nakuru is the fourth largest city in Kenya. And the ex-mayor of the city of Nakuru was a devotee of Bhagwan. So he had a large house with a huge courtyard. And in that courtyard, a lot of devotees had gathered. And so Swami took the first break at Nakuru. Nakuru, which comes at around 25% of the journey.
Right.
So 660 kilometers means about 120 kilometers away.
And he says that 310 miles to go from Nakuru. And I think Nakuru is also famous for that Nakuru Lake.
Yes.
The town is named after that. Mr. Thakur was the ex-mayor. That's what Kasturi writes. And Swami decides to spend some time there, because I think one of the reasons why Professor Kasturi writes is, they were very organized. That's what catches Swami's attention. And they were doing bhajans there. And that's why Swami stops there and spends some time. And looking at it, Swami must have been really tired. And any of us would be waiting to go and hit the sack in that sense, right?
Naturally, it has been a long day. And see, we should not forget that as per Indian time, there are still 3 hours ahead. I mean, if they are saying it's 5 p.m. in the evening, it's actually 8 p.m. in India, as far as Swami is concerned, because he has woken up at 4 a.m. or 3:30 a.m. as per Indian time.
Right.
So it's a really, really long day, but that is the love of the Lord for the devotees. And that is one thing Swami never compromised. And we shall see that throughout the African trip, as we have seen it throughout his life, never ever compromised when it comes to devotees. His physical frame was like a candle that kept burning and burning to give light to his devotees, so much so that, you know, he doesn't bother about his frame melting as long as it can give light and warmth to others around.
And then he says that 83 miles ahead of Nakuru, there was another town called Eldore, I think.
Eldore, yeah.
Eldore, and this actually was a town which was a little farther away from the highway. So they did not really expect Swami to come inside the town.
A detour.
So, right. And so all the devotees had lined up the highway itself to see Swami driving by. And I'm sure Swami must have slowed down, waving to all of these people and driving. And I'm sure Kasturi must have been writing this with relief that Swami did not again stop and alight and take aarti and spend some time there.
Yes, because, you know, many times, you know, we feel that, God, you can. You love your devotee so much, but we don't love your devotee so much. If you stop like this, what will happen to us? I remember, you know, there used to be, sometimes in our samitis, people will sing and it is not pleasing to the ear. And the standard reason given is, come on, Swami is Bhavapriya. So I used to think that Swami is Bhavapriya, but we are not Bhavapriyas, we are all Bahyapriya. We want the good tune and good this. So that is one more thing, you know, we get to experience when we travel along with Swami. We get a chance to see, the chance to observe the kind of supreme sacrifices that Swami is making. You know, we always, from outside, we just look at the kind of welcome Swami is receiving, the kind of adoration he is receiving. But for once, when we go to the other side, we see the kind of efforts and sacrifices that he is constantly making. He is living his life. You know, there is no exaggeration in the statement that Swami makes in his discourses when he says, from the tip of my hair till the tip of my toe, it's only selflessness. Absolutely no selfishness. Everything only for the others, and that is what happened at Nakuru, at Eldore, even later at 70% of the way at Tororo. Tororo also, huge crowds had gathered, and Swami once again stopped there to give darshan, to give blessings to all the devotees, gave vibhuti to some people. Simply amazing the kind of love the devotees have, and more amazing the love that the Lord has.
And almost in all of these places, that is what surprised me. All of these places, Professor Kasturi writes that people are sitting and doing bhajans, and they were prepared to receive Swami in the way Swami would really like it. So it was not just devotees there or people who are curious to see Swami, but people who are devoted to Swami and were actually had embraced the way of life which Swami would like. And they were inviting Swami to their presence through those expressions. And that was so heartening to see. And as you're saying that these people are driving into a country which was so very different from their own, and to see these familiar sights, it must have been so very heartening for all of the people who were traveling with Swami. And finally, as Swami is entering into the country of Uganda, and they see that the government has kept a pilot car ready to mark the beginning of this entourage as a sign of respect. Because as soon as Swami entered the country of Uganda, he has actually become a state guest.
You know, that happened at the town of Malaba.
Right.
Malaba is a very interesting town. Again, you know, I just couldn't resist going and seeing about each of these towns. There is a Malaba town in Kenya, and there is a Malaba town, I hope that's the right way to pronounce it, M-A-L-A-B-A. There is a Malaba town in Uganda.
Okay.
So, what is the difference? There is a Malaba River, after which this town has been named. And the Malaba River is the boundary between Uganda and Kenya. And the part of the town that's on the Ugandan side is the Malaba town, Uganda. And the part of the town that's on the Kenyan side is the Malaba town, Kenya. And you cross the river and you go from Kenya to Uganda. So, as you said, on the other side of the bridge, that is where there was a royal escort, a government pilot car. You know, incidentally, it happens at this point in time, Idi Amin was the I think a military general, a general of the armed forces in Uganda. He was the chief of staff of the Ugandan army, which is a high profile post, General Idi Amin. And the personal doctor of General Idi Amin was Dr. C.G. Patel.
Okay.
So, I think Dr. C.G. Patel's love and devotion would definitely have rubbed off onto Idi Amin, and Idi Amin also knew that this is a real, real unique personage that is visiting the country. And as you said, therefore, Swami became a state guest the moment he entered Uganda, because Idi Amin held a very, very high post in Uganda, and he was given a pilot card and a pilot car and escort. And this continued till Swami reached his destination at Kampala. But along the way, there's one town called Jinja that comes. That is another place where Swami made a stop. And incidentally, Jinja is also the birthplace of the River Nile. This is where Nile begins its journey from Lake Victoria. And so, at Jinja, Swami made another halt to bless the devotees with darshan, sparshan and sambhashan and vibhuti possibly, before heading towards Kampala, which he reached, as we said, at 1:30 a.m. the next day. 1:30 a.m. as per Ugandan time will mean something like 3:30 a.m. or 4 a.m. as per Indian time, which means for a full 24 hours, Swami has been on the move. And as he lands there, what does he see? Swami sees that 2,000 devotees have gathered there doing bhajans even at that point in time in the night. And so, Swami doesn't go to rest. He doesn't say, I'll hit the sack now. He goes for yet another session of darshan and bhajan. I'm thinking Kasturi and the rest of the entourage must have been completely fatigued.
Exactly. I mean, Swami has traveled almost for... I mean, even if you say that Swami landed there at 12 o'clock in the airport, and even if we say that Swami spent 1 hour in the airport to take some respite, he's traveled for 12 hours before reaching there. And the story in, you know, in Kampala is also quite beautiful. You know, here is the Lord who is not tiring, but there are the devotees who are not tiring. Because as we hear, I was reading the account of Mr. J. Jethwa. He was a person who was a resident of Kampala.
Right? Okay.
And his story, of course, one part of the story, we'll reserve it for the next episode, because that is related to the second day of Swami's stay in Kampala. So the first day, he says that, you know, his story is also a very beautiful story. His family has been living in Kampala for so many years, and he's a 13-year-old boy. And his problem is he's been born with a very acute attack of asthma. I mean, they've been trying all kinds of cures and nothing seems to be helping. Doctors from the UK have come and tried to treat him and nothing works. So one day, one of his neighbors tells him that, you know what, like this Sai Baba is coming. And they say he is God. Okay, and imagine he's a 13-year-old boy, never heard of Swami, never seen Swami, does not know what Swami appears like, what he looks like, does not know what Swami does anything. The first thing when he hears Swami's name and he hears that so-and-so is coming, he says he is God. He says, I know it. You know, Sai Baba is God and he's coming. So God is coming. You know, he says that as a 13-year-old boy, that gets imprinted in his mind that God is coming to my neighborhood and I should go and see him. Right? So he goes home and he tells his parents that, come, we'll have to go and see. God is coming, we have to see him. So Sambo manages to convince his parents and they go and sit in the house of Dr. C.G. Patel. Outside the bungalow of C.G. Patel, they've put this Shamiana to welcome Swami.
This is on the second day, you're saying, right? Second day.
On the first day.
On the first day.
To welcome Swami as he is driving in. And 2,000 people are seated there. And they go and sit there at 6 p.m. in the evening.
Oh, so they have sat there for like 5 to 6 hours.
Right. And they start bhajans at 6 p.m. waiting for Swami. And they say that from 6 till 1:30 when Swami finally came, they were sitting and doing bhajans waiting for Swami's arrival.
Wow. Actually, so many more things that Kasturi describes, but I think we will stop at this point because it's almost 1:58 in our studios here. It is time for the next segment. So, we will continue from the grand welcome at Kampala as Swami arrived there almost in the middle of the night on the 1st of July. We have just covered the 29th of June, the 30th of June when Swami took off, as well as the arrival on the 1st of July early in the morning at 1:30. So we will stop our African Odyssey at 1:30 a.m. on the 1st of July and continue it, Prem, is it the next week or the next fortnight?
Well, that we'll have to. I think we'll do a part of it next week maybe. before we go into the Bhagavat Vahini. Right?
Okay, so the next week, again, once again, our Bhagavata Vahini gets postponed by a week. So the next week also we will be going into the African Odyssey, after which we will have the Bhagavata Vahini fortnight. And interestingly, at this point, you know, I just thought we'll leave on this note. If we look at the Sanatana Sarathis, in the 1960s, 1970s, Bhagwan regularly contributed the main article for the Sanatana Sarathi, and those articles have been compiled into the Vahinis today.
Right.
And when we look at this African visit, even during the African visit, Swami continued to contribute for the Sanatana Sarathi. And very, very interestingly and coincidentally for us, you know, as we are doing the Aftam Satsang, the Vahini that Swami was writing when Swami was in Africa happens to be the Bhagavata Vahini. So as he was writing his own Sai Bhagavatam, he was also physically writing the Bhagavata Vahini, which we will be taking up the week after the next week, that fortnight, in our Bhagavata Vahini fortnight. Again, another amazing coincidence. We are so thrilled, Bhagwan, that as we have taken up the Bhagavata Vahini a couple of months before, it's coming so beautifully coinciding along with the African trip. So dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this Odyssey. If you have got anything to share, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. If you have got any experiences related to this, most welcome. We will definitely be sharing it in our the satsang on the African visit. And since our African Odyssey will go on span for at least 5-6 weeks possibly, or 4 weeks at a minimum, you can definitely write in and send so that we can also share it with the whole world and all of us can rejoice at the Sai Bhagavatam at Africa. With that, we take your leave. We will leave you with this song, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Yes. समय स्वागतम श्री सत्य साई स्वागतम श्री सत्य साई स्वागतम स्वागतम सुस्वागतम विश्व गुरु के स्वागतम स्वागतम सुस्वागतम विश्व गुरु के स्वागतम परम पुरुषुनिकि सुस्वागतम् अरितिरातुनिकि स्वागतम् परम पुरुषुनिकि
Oh,